Today on Maine Calling, the lore of the ukulele. The ukulele, or ukulele, did not originate in Hawaii, but has long been associated with the sounds of the islands. A four-string instrument with a unique sound that's affordable and easy to transport, the uke is also easy to learn. It's experienced several heydays in the last century, bolstered most recently by the pandemic and the internet. It's also become the connective force at the center of a growing number of local in-person ukulele groups and gatherings, as well as a worldwide community of enthusiasts. I'm Keith Shortall, and as part of our Passions and Pastimes series, we'll talk with a panel of players and teachers about why they're so jazzed about ukes. Maine Calling is just ahead.
Maine Calling On Demand is made possible by Maine Farmland Trust, working with farmers to grow the future of farming and food in Maine. Learn more at mainefarmlandtrust.org/learn. And by Maine Seacoast Mission, supporting Maine island communities through education, health, and community engagement. Learn more at seacoastmission.org.
I'm Keith Shortall, and this is Maine Calling.
Some sweet Hawaiian ditty, gee, don't they write 'em pretty? I love a ukulele song.
For many of us, the sound of a ukulele is associated with the laid-back, happy vibes of the islands. For aficionados, it's a versatile instrument in search of new boundaries. Today, we'll learn all about the ukulele, its origins, its playability, and about where it's performed in Maine. The show is part of our Passions and Pastimes series. Joining me, Joel Eckhaus, whose ukulele playing we just heard a moment ago. That was the ukulele song. He's been playing, performing, and teaching ukulele for decades. He also plays and teaches the mandolin, the tenor guitar, banjo, and other instruments. He's a luthier and proprietor of Ernest Uncommon Musical Instruments. Nina Miller teaches ukulele and is the founder of the Flukes, a fun-loving ukulele society. It started as the Falmouth Library Ukulele Ensemble. She's also a French horn player for the Portland Symphony Orchestra. And Steve Roy, he plays and performs ukulele, upright bass, mandolin, fiddle, and guitar, and teaches at 317 Maine Music Center and at the Portsmouth Music and Arts Center. And we invite you, as always, to join the conversation. Have you ever tried playing an ukulele or wanted to learn? What inspired you? You can email talk@mainepublic.org, post a comment on Facebook or Instagram, or just give us a call. The number is 1-800-399-3566. That's 1-800-399-3566. Steve Roy, let's start from a point of some controversy, that is the pronunciation of the name of the instrument. I dutifully called it ukulele. Many of us grew up knowing it as the ukulele. And there is debate, I guess, within the community about how it's pronounced. How do you pronounce it?
Oh, well, when I was first introduced to the ukulele in I was in Hawaii, and so that, you know, they I was learning a bit about how to pronounce things in Hawaiian and speak a few Hawaiian words. And so it turns out that there's only one vowel sound for each vowel in Hawaiian. So there's no long and short vowels. So it ends up being ukulele is the U's and E's are pronounced that way. So it's ukulele as opposed to the common ukulele, which has kind of become the more common way to say it. Stateside anyways. And so it's one of those things where I tend to, if I'm in Hawaii, I'll pronounce it correctly. But usually when I'm back in the on the mainland, I tend to go back to the ukulele pronunciation of uke. But I guess it depends. I'll change depending on what situation I'm in.
Yeah, there are those who make the argument, well, it's, you know, we're trying to preserve Hawaiian, being respectful of the original words, but you're not going to be someone who comes in to say, hey, I want a ukulele lesson, and you're going to say, oh, it's pronounced ukulele.
Well, I'll let them know, but I'm not going to force anybody to pronounce anything any certain way.
Yeah, and the translation from the Hawaiian is, as you said, ukulele, which is jumping flea.
There's some debate about that, so I've read anyways, but some jumping flea or bouncing flea, or I think it might even be like jumping headlice. I think uku is what they call headlice. So
talk a little bit about the history as you understand it. You visited Hawaii, but it didn't come from there directly. It found its way there.
Yeah, it has roots in a Portuguese instrument called the machete. And I guess, I mean, the hint, it's nice how much they actually know. So many of the origins of different instruments are shrouded in mystery. But there's actually records of one ship coming from Madeira, which is an island off, it's a Portuguese island. It came over in the 1870s, and there was with a bunch of contracted workers to work at the sugar plantations in Hawaii. And on that boat, there were three people that were all, they were woodworkers, furniture makers. They also would make guitars and some of the Portuguese instruments like the machete and the rojão. And so once they fulfilled their contract with the sugar plantations, all three of them moved right to Honolulu and started working in workshops, opened up their own shops, and started making guitars and all these smaller, you know, the machete and the rojão. And they caught on really quick, and within a decade they already had the name ukulele, and the rojão kind of morphed into what they call the taro patch guitar, and a slightly bigger instrument with a slightly different tuning. But yeah, it's really interesting. And then the King David Kalakaua, hopefully I'm pronouncing that right, he was a musician, and also Queen Liliuokalani after him, and both of those Hawaiian monarchs wrote a lot of music, wrote songs. I mean, the Aloha Oi, which is probably the most recognizable of the traditional Hawaiian songs, was written by Liliuokalani, if I'm not mistaken. So I found it to be really interesting that you've got this musical tradition coming from the top down. Like, imagine world leaders nowadays writing songs like Aloha Oi. I think that's extremely interesting. Helped spread the culture, you know, that musical culture into Hawaii, which I really noticed that when I was there, was that it seems like everybody plays the ukulele.
And we'll talk more about the music part of the instrument as well. But just in terms of the experience of playing the ukulele, you as we said at the top, you play a lot of stringed instruments, upright bass, you know, mandolin. Those are very different strings to play and can be not exactly accessible to beginners. What is it about the ukulele that you find just fun as an experience?
Well, I think a big part of having fun is being able to play it easily and immediately start to play songs. And the ukulele is, the strings are nylon, very easy to push down. There's a lot of chords on it that are one finger chords, two finger chords, so that makes it easy as well. The strumming part's very easy, so it's really fun to pick up, and you immediately, right away, you can start making some, you know, nice sounds with it. But then for me, when I was at in Hawaii, I really saw that the way that the people I was working with, because I was there with a bluegrass band and we were teaching some kids camps, but we partnered with a great Hawaiian musician named Keoki Kahumoku. And so I saw the way he was teaching kids and other people the ukulele. And so it was a very community-oriented type of thing, where it was, you know, just getting people together to sing songs, eat food, and that whole the cultural part of it was a I found that to be really appealing. And so as soon as I got back from Hawaii, I decided, well, I'm gonna, you know, now that I had a little bit of background in the Hawaiian style of playing and teaching, I figured I would continue that back in New England if I could.
Yeah. Nina Miller, you're a professional French horn player. Again, not an easy instrument to learn and to make a living as a professional musician. How did you come upon the ukulele, and what is it about the instrument that that interests you?
Crazy, right? Going from the French horn to the ukulele. It's like from the sublime to the ridiculous. How it happened was at the time in 2012, I was working as a librarian at the Falmouth Memorial Library, and the director of the library had just purchased a ukulele, but she didn't know how to play it. So knowing that I am a professional musician, she said, why don't we start a ukulele ensemble? And I thought, you don't say no to your library director, your boss. And I said, sure, that's a great idea. But I didn't play it at the time. So we got Joel Eckhaus in to help us out, to start us off. And Joel was an amazing teacher, and he got us up and running. And then after a while, I took it over. And we just exploded from 8 people on that first February freezing cold dark night that we got together to now we have 35 musicians in our band. So my goal and my passion is changing this message that so many people have that they're not musical. I have more people that say, well, I would love to play the ukulele, but I'm not musical. My teacher told me I'm not musical, or my parents told me I'm not musical, or my friends told me I can't sing on pitch. And my goal is to change that message for every single person on this planet that has a heartbeat. You are musical. You can play. You can sing. And that's my goal. I want to change that negative message, which came to me from my dad, who loved, loved, loved music. And his third grade teacher divided their class into participators and listeners. So either you were a singer or you were a listener. And she put him in the listener group. And he never forgot that and was just devastated and just came out with this message. He's not a musical guy. Yeah. So this is my goal.
It's an interesting, you know, we hear these stories all the time about how, on the one hand, many teachers inspired and helped kids into becoming who they are. In other cases, they maybe even unintentionally sort of took away a joy in their life by telling them they couldn't do something. And sometimes I hear this a lot around music. Sometimes it's, as you say, I remember I had a teacher who said, I tried to take guitar lessons. He said, your hands are too small. So I tried to play violin, and they said, you don't have enough of a chin. And, you know, you hear this after a while. I became a drummer in the end. But it's a few of those moments, and suddenly someone might be discouraged. And so are you finding that people are suddenly realizing, I can do this, even though it's very late, much later in their lives?
Oh, absolutely. Totally. I have people in the Flukes. Some have played an instrument, or the ukulele or another instrument, for decades. Other people picked it up at age 65 and within a year were able to be in an ensemble playing and singing. People never thought they could play an instrument, never mind singing and playing at the same time, and being part of a group and having to start together and end together and making music. So the other lesson that I drive into my ensemble work is that you can do this. You can do it, and you can be a musician. It's not just about being a ukulele player. It's about being a musician. and I can teach them how to be a musician at any age. So, yeah, been very successful, and I'm proud of the work that we've done in a group setting.
Sam, our engineer, is standing by. I wanted Sam to play the clip of the Flukes of Nina's group. This is a sample from a performance of her group that she's talking about.
I see the light, I see the
That's cool. That's fun. Joel Eckhaus, let's bring you in here. Your name has already been mentioned several times here.
Okay.
You were the go-to guy when Nina said, we need someone to show us what's up with this instrument. Tell us about your, I guess, you also have a wide musical experience with instruments. What is it about the ukulele that you find, I guess, so accessible and so interesting to introduce to people who maybe have never played before?
Well, I was always interested in what some of the older musicians were doing. Back in the 1920s, when the ukulele was experiencing its first wave of popularity, there were people like Ukulele Ike, who was the voice of Jiminy Cricket. People might remember that voice. Or Roy Smek, who was called the Wizard of the Strings. And these people were masters of the ukulele in its early days in the United States, and that's what got me interested in getting started with it.
People of a certain age will remember from the older than me, but will remember Arthur Godfrey in the 1950s was maybe one of the first times that in modern history and mass media that the ukulele was the people were exposed to the ukulele. Later, my generation, I remember, of course, Tiny Tim in the late 60s. So there have been the ukulele has had these moments in popular television and popular media. And in fact, there's one happening now. But how has it been portrayed, I guess, in all these iterations?
It has been portrayed sometimes as a toy or just a fun thing to do, but a lot of musicians are really challenged by the ukulele and will take it very seriously and try to play almost anything on the instrument, classical music, jazz music, popular music, you name it.
Yeah, and you find as a musician, are there boundaries that you try to push for yourself as you're learning it or continuing to expand your repertoire?
Well, I'm always looking for new songs that might sound good on the uke, instrumental tunes that might make a good ukulele piece. But I'm not so interested in expanding the uke into every kind of music that there is, but other people are doing that, and I'm glad they are.
Yeah, others are doing that. Okay, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll continue this interesting conversation about a really interesting musical instrument. This is Maine Calling. We'll be right back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Keith Shortall. We're learning all about the small but versatile ukulele, or ukuleles as it's commonly known, why it's popular, and where to learn or play with others in Maine. Steve, as we mentioned a little earlier, it's part of its appeal is it's easier to play. It's less stressful on the fingers. They're nylon strings. You don't have to maybe stretch as much to play basic chords. For all these reasons, it's just kind of accessible. But also, it seemed to me that and I played guitar before. And learning and remembering basic progressions just seemed easier, maybe because there's only four strings, or I can just remember and easily reach them. And that means if you can get to progressions, that means you can put these chords together and realize that you're playing, you can play a number of different songs, not just one at a time. Right. In other words, is that one of the easy, is that something that you find for beginners is fun, that they can start to play songs right away?
Oh, of course, of course. And it tends to, there's a few keys that lend itself to the ukulele, especially the key of C, the beloved key of C. And so when you start seeing the same chords over and over again, and there's a lot of songs that use the same chords in the key of C, you start to realize the, you can hear the relationships between those and start to pick them out by ear a little bit better. So and that's part of the accessibility of it as well.
Yeah. I have, I am not a player, but I dabble in it, and I have one here with me. What's interesting for the listeners here is that because we're connected on Zoom, our guests will not hear this live ukulele music, which we can talk about later, because I'm curious about what that meant during the pandemic, if anything, to you at all. But they will understand probably which progression I'm talking about. And it's this one. And I have a little montage, a musical montage of songs that I kind of figured out are related to this progression. And Sam, if you can play that clip. Anyway, so you guys, you couldn't hear that, but the audience could. But it's basically, I guess, a 1/4. I'm not sure if it's a 1. I don't know what it's called, but it's a very common progression. And I'm wondering, though, as I mentioned, like, you couldn't hear that. During the pandemic, a lot of people discovered ukulele and were playing online. But was that ever a problem? Did you realize at some point, hey, I'm playing this, but you couldn't hear it? Or did you figure out how to configure Zoom? I only learned this recently, so.
Oh, for me?
Anyone, Steve, yeah, sure.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, on Zoom, you can turn on original sound, which won't mute the ukulele while you're playing it, or any instrument. And without that on, Zoom tries to cut out everything that's in the background that's not the human voice. So whenever when the pandemic hit and all of my lessons switched to online, I had to get used to working with Zoom pretty quickly. Of all the different things that I was teaching, the ukulele seemed to lend itself, especially my ukulele groups, worked out quite well on Zoom, where I've got, 20 people in the Zoom chat with me, and then I mute everybody, and I just strum and play a song, and I share the music, and then everybody plays along and sings along, but I can't hear, everyone can only hear me singing, for good or ill, but then everyone else can sing along to that, and then afterwards we'll unmute and talk about any challenges or successes that we had while we were playing that tune. So that's worked out really well, and I still have a ukulele jam through 317 Maine Community Music Center in Yarmouth, and I really enjoy teaching uke on Zoom. I think it's worked out quite well.
Let's take a call here. Let's bring in, let's see if we can bring in Chris, who's calling from Westbrook. Hi, Chris. Welcome to the program.
Well, thank you so much for taking my call, and thank you, all of you. You're all geniuses in my eyes. I know Joel Eckhouse because I took my first ukulele lesson over the phone with a gentleman named Cartwright Thompson, and he's trying to show me how to hold it and show me the chords over the phone, and it was kind of hilarious. But he got me tuned into Joel Eckhouse, who's he's the local ukulele wizard, as far as I'm concerned. And I just wanted to say a couple things. First of all, I think when people first start playing the ukulele or any stringed instrument, the daunting thing is learning to tune it and stay in tune. And if you're going to play with other people's, you know, people, you know, keeping it in tune. And so, I'm not pushing that store, but Buck Dancer's Choice in Portland has lots of ukuleles and little clip-on tuners to make it so much easier to learn to tune it. Once it's in tune, even open without putting your fingers on the frets is a chord, and you can sing a song because it's, you know, but I wanted at least Joel to talk and tell people how to see the movie The Mighty Uke, because it's amazing. So that's all I wanted
to
say.
Okay. Chris, thank you. Joel?
The Mighty Uke. Well, I'm actually not sure how you can see it, but I'm sure it's online. So it was an early movie made in, say, the 90s or the 2000s. About the sort of contemporary movement of ukulele, and it's pretty good flick.
Yeah. Are there other? Yes. Yeah. Go ahead.
Yeah.
Go ahead,
for those of you who have a local library, you can order it if your library doesn't have it. We do have it at the Falmouth Memorial Library, and it can go out on loan to anyone in the interlibrary loan system. And it's a great, great movie. There are other ukulele stories and documentaries similar to that, but that's a great one for starters.
Yeah, Nina, do you send your beginning members anywhere else to certain books, or how do you recommend that they sort of expand their skills outside of the group?
Well, practice, like anything, like any instrument. If you don't practice, you don't get better. If you practice, you get better. The thing that is so wonderful about the ukulele is such a social instrument. It just begs to be played in a group with other like-minded people. And a lot of the members of the Flukes go to different houses and have jam sessions and or get together in a small group and work on songs that we're working on in the big group. So it's just such a social instrument. It's a community-based instrument. Also, just wanted to mention another advantage about the ukulele is that it's affordable. It's an instrument you can get without breaking the bank. Now, I never recommend people go out and buy a $29.99 ukulele, but you can get a good beginner ukulele for $100, even maybe a little under $100.
Yes, so, the one I just played was $100 new, and then I went into a Goodwill a couple of days later and found the very same ukulele for about $12. So I have two, but you're right. I mean, guitars are in the high hundreds, and I don't know what a French horn goes for, but I assume it's not $100. And so, this is a big. It's a way to make this accessible.
Yes, definitely an important part of it is having an instrument you can buy and not feel like you're going to break the bank on it.
Yeah, I want to talk about the different kinds and sizes of ukuleles in a minute, but I want to bring in a few people. Jeff writes, just wanted to let folks know that Bay Chamber Music School in Camden, where I am on the faculty, offers private lessons and group ukulele classes. This year, Bay Chamber Ukulele Ensemble has also been brought back. And he also directs Midcoast Ukes, a community music group in Belfast that has some holiday gigs coming up. Let's go to Doug in Woolwich or Woolwich, depending on which side you come down on. Hi, Doug. Welcome to the program.
Oh, hi. Glad to participate.
Yeah, so tell us about you're the director at Maine Fiddle Camp.
Yes, at Maine Fiddle Camp, for the last 12 or so years, we've offered ukulele as one of our instruments, along with many other acoustic instruments besides fiddle. And it's become very popular. Nina and Joel have taught at Maine Fiddle Camp, so they're very familiar with how it works. And we have people that specialize in come and and specialize in ukulele, but also a lot of times fiddlers and other melody instruments pick up the uke and join in on some of the performances, because it's a good way for people who are melody players to learn about the chord progressions and the chords that go along with it. And one of our favorite things at Maine Fiddle Camp that involves the ukulele is we have the Great Horned Ukestra, which we have nothing but ukuleles, and then people who come to camp that have played some sort of horn before in high school or whatever, and they bring their horn, and we end up playing a foxtrot and a waltz for our old-time country dance in the evening with the Great Horned Ukestra, as the ukulele was very popular during the turn of the previous century up through the 20s. And a lot of the music we associate with the ukulele is that early jazz music.
Yeah. There is a lot of... I noticed I was reading about how George Harrison, the famous Beatle, was an aficionado of ukulele. And in particular, kind of the music... He was interested in the music hall genre of the in Britain, you know, during the war and after. Is that what a lot of uke players are interested in, as opposed to, I know there are some sort of doing expanding the musical boundaries of the ukulele in a modern way, but a lot of this is based in that old tradition. Joel?
I could answer that. Yeah. There was a performer in Britain named George Formby, and he was extremely popular in the music halls, and he was on radio and in films. Some people claim that he single-handedly won World War II by raising the spirits of the British people. And he never performed in the United States because he didn't think that we would understand his humor, although it is pretty understandable for the average person. And so people like George Harrison and the Beatles were highly influenced by George Formby, and he was extremely popular. In fact, when the Beatles were on the Ed Sullivan Show, there was another ukulele performer who whose name escapes me at the moment, but she performed in between the two Beatles songs on the first time they ever played in the U.S.
Yeah. Steve, I want to play a clip of you performing. It's a Grateful Dead tune, I believe. And I think we have, Sam, if you, I don't give him a second to get that ready. And that's a good example of a finger picking, using finger picking on the ukulele. Talk about, I guess, about that, as opposed to a lot of us are used to just everybody strumming in unison.
Yeah. I of course, when I first started playing the uke, I was strumming, but then I was experimenting with the low G string, which is. Typically, a ukulele has the G string is a high pitched. It's a reentrant tuning, which means that the strings aren't all going in order of ascending pitch. There's kind of the pitch jumps around. So I ended up using a low G, and I was experimenting with that. And right away, I started finger picking because I already finger picked the guitar a little bit. So I ended up working out a style that's somewhat based off of Travis picking on the guitar, and I applied that to the uke as far as a way to kind of accompany myself, play a melody, and then have some sort of accompaniment to it. And so I've been developing that, and that's been my own kind of attack plan. I've had a lot of fun with that, and so some of my students have jumped on that, the low G finger-picked ukulele style. But I also play standard tuning ukulele as well.
All right. We are going to, I think it's time to take a break. We'll take another quick break. When we come back, we want to hear from you. The number is 1-800-399-3566. This is Maine Calling. We'll be right back. Welcome back. I'm Keith Shortall, and you're listening to Maine Calling. Today's show is about ukuleles, the instrument that we associate with Hawaii, but is popular throughout Maine. We have three ukulele musicians with us today. Steve Roy, who plays and teaches multiple instruments, including the ukulele. Joel Eckhouse, who is also a multi-instrumentalist, as well as a luthier. And Nina Miller, who leads the Flukes, a community ukulele group. And she also teaches ukulele and plays French horn professionally. Join the conversation. Do you have any uke stories you want to share? The number is 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainpublic.org or post to our Facebook page or to Instagram. I got a lot of calls lined up. I'd like to get to them. But I did want to talk about when we say ukuleles, there are different sizes and different types. Is there sort of the most common one that everyone starts on? Or do you have a few options there, Joel Eckhouse?
Well, traditionally, the soprano ukulele, the smallest one, was the first ukulele to come around. And then in Hawaii, they started to develop larger size ukes, the concert size, the tenor size. And all those three instruments are all tuned exactly the same, G, C, E, A. So if you play one, you can play them all, but the spacing is a little different. And then the baritone uke kind of came into popularity with Arthur Godfrey, and that is tuned just like the top four strings of a guitar. So if you play guitar, you can immediately apply your chords to the baritone ukulele.
I see. Let's go to Brian in Belfast. Hi, Brian. Welcome.
Hi there. I was just going to mention that the baritone uke is what I play because I also play guitar and I play mandolin, so I already learned a couple different fingerings for instruments. So I wanted to not expand and really learn those ukulele chords. So the baritone uke, luckily my father, gave me his before he passed away, and he got it in the Korean War, and it's a Brazilian Giannini. It has a beautiful sound because it's a little bigger, and so it fills in the gaps in the sound if you're playing with a group a little bit nicer.
Yeah. Do you play with others? Other uke players?
Not in a ukulele group. Not in it, but there are folks around Belfast that do play in ukulele groups, and easy to find.
Yeah. Brian, thanks so much. I appreciate the call. Let's go to Gordon in Owl's Head. Hi, Gordon.
Hey, good morning, Keith. I just wanted to put in a plug in for an organization here in the upper mid-coast in Rockland. The group is called Ukes Rock, and it's named that because of the fact that the bass line is in Rockland, but we don't play Hawaiian music. We play a lot of rock and roll, a lot of album kind of rock and roll music, that type of thing. And one of the things I wanted to say was there's no better way to learn how to play the ukulele than to play with others. You can practice by yourself all day long, but there's no way better to improve than to play in a group. And one of the things that Ukes Rock does is we are open to everybody of all skills and all levels. So it's a great organization, and I'd encourage anybody that is thinking about ukulele, find a local group and get involved.
Gordon, thanks so much. Nina, is that have you found that the group setting makes it maybe easier than someone going it on their own?
100%. Again, it's such a social instrument, and it just begs to be played in groups with people together. And also, I always say there's safety in numbers. So if you're not confident in your playing and you're in a group, you can kind of hide a little bit. When you're just doing it on your own, you can't hide. So definitely group is the way to go. I should also mention in our group, we have all of those different size ukes represented. And we also have a bass. It's called a bass ukulele, but it's not a uke at all. It's just like a regular bass, but it looks cute like a ukulele. And that's actually very important because without the bass, it's hard to keep everyone together when you have 35 people in a group. So That's an important part of the flukes.
Is it hard to find a bass uke player as it is a regular bass player?
Yes. Totally hard. Okay. And we cudgel our three bass players, and we'll do anything to make their lives easier because we love them and we really need them.
Yeah, let's go to Gene and Machias. Hi, Gene. Welcome.
Thank you. Hello. I've been doing ukulele, geez, almost 60 years now, and have been teaching. I taught at the University of Maine at Machias for a long time, and we had a ukulele club there that was so much fun that we got asked to the International Ukulele Kaylees up in Liverpool, Nova Scotia. We've been to 7 or 8 of those. And I just wanted to say to Steve that Queen Liliuokalani did do Aloha Oe, and we'll be doing that one at the Quality Voices show this next couple weeks from now. And Danina, I started out on baritone horn myself. And
I remember. Yes. And your group in the class is great.
Well, thank you. And some of alums are the ones that have carried it on. I don't work at the university anymore, but some of our all-star squad from that day. And it was basically a rock band that could do eclectic stuff all over the map. Our songbook had like maybe 1,400 songs in it. To Joel, thanks for the beautiful electric surf ukulele, concert size, and if you can find time to make a tenor, I would definitely commission you on that. But Joel studied with Roy Smick, the vaudevillian, and
Gene, thank you so much. Appreciate it. I want to get to a few more calls, but this is a good point, Joel, to bring up this electrification question. We all know what happened to Bob Dylan at the Newport Folk Festival. Is there any controversy about plugging in a uke? Are there purists who say never?
There probably are some purists, but I don't have a problem with plugging ukulele in. I've made ukuleles that are both acoustic and electric, and I've made some solid body ukuleles that are just electric. So yeah, it's anything goes.
Okay, not trying to drum up controversy where there isn't any. Let's go to Dana in Portland. Dana, welcome. Are you there?
Hey, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yes, go ahead, please.
Thank you, Keith. Hey, I'm known out in the Sebago Lake area as Captain Uke. I'm a retired Navy captain, and after I retired, I started teaching ukulele out in the area and had a number of students. And I just wanted to mention, one of the important aspects of playing is the sociability of people getting together. I can't tell you, and it's been alluded to and spoken of, how much fun people have when they get together. But in a day and age when we need connection and people getting together, what better activity than to get together and sing? A big shout out to Nina, who really was the fuel for a lot of us in the area to get going. And I'm a proud owner of two of Joel's instruments. And also, I want a big shout out this morning to Lee Urban, who headed up the Casco Bay Ukulele Festival that was going for a number of years. So thanks for taking my call.
Thanks very much, Dana. Let me try one more here. We'll go to, is it Margie or Margie?
Yeah.
Margie, welcome.
Yes, thank you. So first of all, aloha to Joel and Nina. I don't know Steve, but I know the other two very well. And Joel was a huge influence in my ukulele journey. And I taught myself. I bought a ukulele in 2009, and I spent about a year teaching myself. And I couldn't go any further, and somebody recommended I get in touch with this guy named Joel Eckhaus, and I did. And I studied with Joel for 2 years, and he was hugely influential because he showed me what you could do, what one could do on the ukulele. And I kept on going, and I study. My teacher is in Hawaii, and I've traveled there about a dozen times now, and it's just been such a huge part of my life. And also, Joel can talk about this, that there's so much more to the ukulele that you can do aside from the strumming, which is wonderful and a huge part of the tradition, how it all started. But there's the chord melody, and that is the direction that I ultimately ended up going in. But it was all because of Joel. I don't know what would have happened if I had not done that. And I also want to say to Nina that I'm so grateful to her that she has this passion for the groups and doing that. I think that is such a wonderful aspect of playing the ukulele. Another thing I wanted to say is a big shout out to Hawaiian music, that I have fallen in love with Hawaiian music and that whole genre, even though there are so many types of Hawaiian music. But the Queen wrote hundreds and hundreds of songs, and so were so many people in the royalty that were involved with music, and it's part of why the ukulele is popular today, that the King Kalakaua really loved music. And so he perpetuated this, and it's, I'm sure, a big part of why it still is going today.
Margie, thank you so much. A lot said there. Joel, is there anything you wanted to respond to?
Well, with regards to Hawaiian music, I just wanted to point out that in the book, The Ukulele, A History by Jim Tranquata and John King, there's a line in here that says, Hawaiian music, this is about early Hawaiian music in the mainland. The first commercial or public performance of Hawaiian music on the mainland, four native Hawaiian sailors gave a concert in their native Sandwich Island language in Portland, Maine in 1838. I thought that was an amazing fact.
Wow. It's had roots for a while. I'm guessing that people might be listening, and the way that we, you know, if you're learning blues guitar, you go back and find blues greats, blues masters, or if you want to play jazz, you go back and you find out who the players were. I want to go to each of you and say, who would you recommend people finding, if they can, on YouTube, examples of to listen to as examples of good, great uke players in their various styles. Steve, start with you, I guess.
Well, let's see. I think my favorite, as far as listening to the uke, is Gabby Pahinui, who's a guitar player, but the uke player in his band, the Sons of Hawaii, for traditional Hawaiian music. It's such a great band, and they have a lot of great songs out there. I mean, of course, there's Jake Shimabukuro, who's kind of a virtuoso that, you know, it's hard to mention the ukulele without people bringing him up. And then, of course, like George Harrison, too. I mean, I love the Beatles, of course. So George being a nice little avenue to get into there.
Yeah. Nina?
All right, I'm going to do a shameless plug. I think everyone that's thinking about learning the ukulele should listen to my flukes on either Facebook or on YouTube, and that's the Fun Loving Ukulele Society. You can see what people who have just played for maybe 6 months or more and what they can do in a group ensemble setting and how much fun we have. So I'll just do a shameless plug. Listen to the flukes, and you will want to start, and you will want to join a group ASAP.
Okay. Joel?
All right. Well, I have a long list, but
that's
Roy
fine.
We
have about a minute, so that's fine.
Okay. Roy Smack was my teacher and my hero. He was in vaudeville and in one of the first talking pictures, and you can find videos of him on YouTube. And there's a whole, like a documentary film that was made in 1980 around the time that I was studying with him. The others are Cliff Edwards or Ukulele Ike. He's just one of the first people I listened to. There's a woman from New York who not many people know of named Annette Henshaw, who played the ukulele and sang and made numerous recordings back in the 1920s. And in contemporary music, there's a player from Liverpool named Chris Howe, or Huff, who has a band called the Ukulele Huff Trio.
And I think we're going to have to leave it there, I'm afraid. There's a long list, and we'll try to connect you with as many as we can. Thanks to all of you. Joel Eckhaus, longtime musician and ukulele performer and luthier with Earnest Uncommon Musical Instruments. Nina Miller, ukulele teacher and founder of The Flukes, who also plays with the Portland Symphony, and Steve Roy, who teaches music at 317 Main and at the Portsmouth Music and Arts Center. I'm Keith Shortall. You've been listening to Maine Calling.